Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and I've got a great show for you tonight. It's obviously December the 12th, 2013. We're getting down close to the wire to Christmas, and I know everybody's eager and excited to get into the holidays, not just to take time off work, but obviously to enjoy some cheer in that with family and friends. So I know we're all looking forward to that and looking for a little break. Just to remind everybody, speaking of Christmas, next week, December 19th, is going to be the last show of 2013 for Golf Talk Live. We're going to take a two-week break, and then I'll be right back at it on January 9th with a guest at that time, and then we'll pick up for the 2014 season. So just to let you know, tonight and December 19th will be the last shows of 2013, and hard to believe a year over already, and we'll be gearing up for next year early in January, right out of the gate, and got a lot of exciting things happening next year. So, and I'll tell you a little bit about more about that as the show goes on. My guest this evening, very excited to have this young man on, Dr. Calen Teasdale. He's a sports and family chiropractor and also a PGA of Canada professional, as well as he's also TPI certified. We're going to talk to him in just a second. I'm going to bring him out, but I just want to remind everybody that's tuning in live during the broadcast, that any time during the show, if you want to call in and either speak to myself or the guests or just to say hello and offer some questions, we're certainly more than excited to do that for you. And you can certainly call into the program. The main number is area code 646-716-4667. That number again is 646-716-4667. And if you're a little bit shy and don't want to call into the program, but you want to send a question in, you can do that by sending it to me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com, and I'll certainly read it live here over the air. Also, I would really love it for those of you that do a lot of Facebooking to go onto Facebook and visit the Golf Talk Live page. It's at www.facebook.com/GolfTalkLiveBlog. Make sure you spell out Golf Talk Live Blog and throw a few likes my way. I appreciate it. And, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't add the Twitter guys in there. I want to thank all of those that have been following me on Twitter the last few weeks since I've been plugging it profusely here on Golf Talk Live. I've been probably had in the last 3 or 4 weeks, probably had 100 new followers at least jump on the Twitter bandwagon here. So I appreciate that. And my Twitter handle, of course, is Ted and Buck CEO. That's Ted and Buck and then CEO spelt in caps. Also, I want you to visit the Golf Talk Live website, and it's at www.golftalkliveblog.com. And there's some great things on there. And I do apologize under the guest scheduling. I still haven't decided how I'm going to do that there. So as it stands right now, it's kind of a blank form. Obviously, I'm announcing it here on the air every week, but I am going to do something. I just wasn't happy with the format that I had there, so I haven't really been utilizing that. So bear with me. I'll have it up and running and properly here in 2014. But make sure that you visit under the book tab and also under the products tab. There's some great books of guests that have been on the program this past year, and I've provided the links as well. So if you want to purchase the book, make some great Christmas gifts, go on there. Had some fabulous books that were written by some of the guests that were on Golf Talk Live. And also one of the products, we've got some great products, one you'll hear about a little bit later in the program. But before I take up too much more time here, I want to bring up my guest this evening. Welcome to Golf Talk Live, Calen.
Thanks very much for having me on the show, Ted. Big fan of the show, and great job with Billy Casper. I thought that was a great broadcast.
Yeah, thank you, first off. I really appreciate that. You know, I had a lot of fun. Billy was, as I've said to just about everybody that would listen, Billy was a fantastic person to have on the program for a number of reasons. Number one, obviously, he's a legend and has done some great things for golf over the years, but he's really a great humanitarian, just a wonderful man, and I just had a pleasure. And it's not too often that you get, somebody willing to spend as much time as he did on the program. So I certainly feel blessed that I had him on here. And he's actually going to be coming on in the new year, probably a couple times more early in the year. He's getting ready, the product that he's involved with, 9-Iron, they're getting ready to launch another new product. And, of course, he's going to be involved with that. I think he'll spend a few minutes there. But then he's also going to be coming back, Calen, in, I believe, either March or maybe April. He has a charity tournament in May in San Diego for Billy's Kids, which is his foundation, and he's going to be coming on and talking about that. And I think he's going to be joined by his daughter, who is involved with the Billy Casper Foundation as well as his business, and I think one of his sons, one of his many children, who's also involved with it. So I'm really looking forward to having Billy back. But tonight we're going to talk with you, Kalen, and we're going to help some people out with not only their golf game, but we're also going to help them out a little bit in your area of expertise, which is, well, you're a chiropractor, so you want to help them with injuries and things like that. So before we start, let's just get a little bit of background on you. First off, how did you get started in golf and obviously as a chiropractor?
Yeah, sure. I actually grew up playing golf. I was fortunate enough to live in Coquitlam, B.C., up in Canada up here. And the golf course was literally about 10 minutes away from my house, and started playing when I was about 6 or 7. And luckily enough, West of Plateau in Coquitlam had a great junior program. Started out with there, and then got involved in some really good amateur tournaments. And when I turned 16, that's when I started really working in the golf industry at Westwood Plateau. And as things progressed, actually, I suffered a pretty bad back injury, back and shoulder, pretty much from doing, you know, overactivity, too many hours in the range, too many hours playing.
Yeah.
And luckily enough, there was a member at a course who was a chiropractor. And I knew nothing about chiropractic at the time or what they could do, but I was pretty desperate at that time to get back on the links with my friends. So what happened, I went and saw him, and within about a month, the pain was pretty much gone, and I had a lot more range of motion and was driving the ball a lot further. And that's when I started to get really interested in chiropractic, and I finished up my kinesiology degree at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver. And then after that, went over to Toronto, Ontario, to the Canadian Memorial Chiropractic College, where I finished up.
Right.
And during all that, I turned professional, the CPGA up here in Canada, and taught at a course called Angus Glen Golf Club, where we hosted a couple of Canadian tours up there. And oddly enough, returned to BC, and now I work with my chiropractor. And we treat a lot of golf-related injuries, work with a lot of local golf courses, but also have a family practice as well. And I also still teach as well. Our golf season's a little bit shorter in Canada, to say the least. usually start off in April or so. So I most of the time I'm at the office dealing with patients.
Yeah, that, and of course the regular listeners into the program know that I'm a fellow Canadian, so I know exactly about the cold winters, and in Ontario it's pretty much the same thing. Come April, you're actually getting what a lot of golfers refer to a member's bounce. We just called it hitting off hard pan in the winter months, because the ground was still a little bit frozen. It didn't really start thawing out until May. And then, you know, come late October, early November, it starts, you know, getting cool again here. I think it's actually a little bit earlier for you. I think the West usually get, if I recall off the top of my head, I think you guys got a little bit of a winter blast before we ever did. But, yeah, it was pretty gosh darn cold, let me tell you.
Yeah, there's some good white stuff on the ground right now. So not very many people are playing golf these days up here.
Yeah, it's... you know, it's funny, we actually had a course, and very quickly, just to mention that, there was a course in Burlington called Burlington Springs, and they actually used to have a kind of a fun tournament every year in the middle of winter, and they would only play on the first, you know, 4 or 5 holes, and of course they'd play with colored balls, and they'd play in the snow, and they would clear off a little bit. They clear off the green, of course, and they clear off some of the fairway, but man, I'll tell you, your hands would just be numb by the time you got about the second hole. Because it was, yeah, it's just, I played it 1 year and I never did it again. It was just too cold. But and that's one of the reasons why I came down to Florida. I just, you know, like you, I enjoy golf and of course I teach as well. I just like the full season, and so I decided to venture on down here to Florida. But let me just go back for a second, because I want to ask you about that. You know, you indicated here just a moment ago that you were injured, and this is really what sort of led you into the chiropractic field. How did you injure? You said that, you know, from practicing a lot and playing a lot. What are some of the common injuries that you come across?
Let's get into that too. And golf injuries are a big part of our sport. In the States, there's roughly 26.5 million golfers that participate annually. Let me just share a couple stats with you, too, because I think it will help a lot with
sure.
the listeners. In 2009, the American Golfer did a survey, and they found that in the States, the avid golfer in the United States plays 46 rounds of golf per year. And that would include your green fee, apparel, balls, gloves, any equipment changes, maybe a new driver, a few lessons. And by the time they add that all up, especially with the food and beverage, you know, get a beer at the turn type of thing, adds up to almost $3,000 that the avid golfer spends
yeah.
annually. And that's a pretty substantial amount. And for our Canadian listeners out there, it's roughly about $1,500 that the Canadian golfer
right.
spends annually. And the reason why golf injuries are so important is because an injured golfer does not contribute to the bottom line of the golf industry.
Right.
And to go on, it's not just an economical impact, but it's also a psychological and emotional impact as well. Because how many of us really, it's a really social game. And when you take that away from somebody, especially when their whole social network revolves around that, it has a really big
yep.
impact. And I know you play a lot of golf too, and I would be pretty,
mm-hmm.
I was devastated at the time that I couldn't compete anymore. So we get a lot of, go ahead.
No, go ahead, finish your thought.
Yes, we get a lot of injured golfers come into our clinic and they're just devastated and they would pay any amount to get back on the links. And that's what we basically do is try and get them back out there. But it's really important for people to understand that, especially somebody with a chronic recurring injury, that there's things that you can do with your swing to really overcome that. And a good example of that would be, let's say you have a hip replacement. It's a very common surgery these days. It's usually a day surgery now. But there's certain things that you can do with your golf swing to come back and combat that. You may not be able to hit the ball 300 yards anymore, but you can still play and play pretty well at that.
Yeah, and you know what, really, there's been a lot of it, and I've talked about this many, many times on the program of late, and, you know, about distance. Particularly, I've actually focused on the driver, and a lot of people put emphasis on that, but really, your short game and that sort of thing is really, in my opinion, the most important area of golf, and I think that a lot of injuries would be alleviated, number one, if people would quit trying to belt at 300 yards. You know, a lot of the pros obviously are able to do that, but that's through years of practice and training and proper teaching techniques and things like that. But a lot of the average golfers out there are just not going to realistically hit it that far. And I think what a lot of them tend to do is they try to give it that extra oomph in order to get it that, you know, as close as they can. And more often than not, that's probably when they're getting some of these injuries, and you know that you're talking about. And is that something that you find as well in your field?
Yeah. It's especially we'll talk about too some of the differences between an amateur and the professional. But from an amateur side of things, a lot of people they take up the driver and just try and smash it, and that's how a lot of injuries occur. But a really good stat is that the average person playing golf, they have a likely injury, percentage-wise, of 26 to 52% of getting injured sometime during their career. And with a professional golfer, it jumps up to about 81%. And when you were to look at the differences of injuries in amateurs, the number one cause mm-hmm. or number one thing that prevents them from playing golf is lower back pain, followed by the elbow, wrist,
right.
hand, and shoulder injuries. When you compare that to a professional golfer, and when I say professional golfer, that's the player on tour. That's not the club
right.
professional. Just want to make
right.
a distinction with that. But with the professionals, it is still low back pain, followed by neck, wrist, hand, and shoulder. So the big differences that we see with the amateurs compared to the professional golfer is they're both getting injured, but for very different reasons. The amateur golfer usually gets injured from poor biomechanics in the golf swing, and the professional
right.
golfer is injured because of overuse type of injuries. And one really good study that was out a few years ago is when you look at the muscle activation from professionals to amateurs, the amateurs, when they swing, they have a higher activation of the key muscles in the golf swing. which leads to a lot of different injuries as well. So the professional golfer seems to be a lot more relaxed when they play.
Well, I think, you know, as you know, if you go back a number of years, you know, a lot of the top players and teachers and that always talked about, you know, particularly with the amateurs. I mean, on the pro level, it doesn't, you don't really see it the same way, but certainly on the amateur level, you know, you get a lot of tension built up in the arms and hands and that sort of thing, and consequently that takes over the whole body. Tom Watson used to talk about that all the time. That was, you know, when he would play in an amateur event or, you know, on the amateur day there, the pro-ams, you know, he said that was one of the things that he always saw with a lot of the players is, and the amateur players, is that there was always a lot of tension in their upper body particularly. And, you know, the more tension that you put in to your upper body, you're more apt to create that tension and create an injury, of course. And I think that's probably one of the key differences, obviously, between the amateurs and the professional. Why do you think, you know, what are some of the other reasons you think that they occur between, and let's start with the amateur here for a second, because that's really who we're targeting here tonight is the amateur. What are some of the top reasons, do you think, that injuries occur?
Yeah, well, I think you hit it on the knob, actually, too, with basically a lot of tension in their golf swing. Let's talk a little bit about number one cause, obviously, is low back pain, but let's kind of go over some of the mechanisms why that occurs, especially in our amateurs. So one of the major causes why this happens is, one, because people usually generally have poor posture, and chiropractic from that point of view can help out a lot with that. But we're starting to see a lot more people, I'm sure you get this as well, is that people come in and, you know, the average person sits at a desk, a lot of typing, things like that, a lot of texting. So they're constantly hunched over, and we call this a C posture when you line up for a dress, or an upper cross syndrome. And it's basically saying that the muscles in the back that support the scapula, they have become really weak over time. And the muscles up front, particularly the pec muscles, are quite taut, so it creates this hunched over feeling. And that's what I really call the plague of the golf swing, because once this happens, everything else starts to fall apart in your swing and you die a horrible, horrible death. Not really to that point, but everything seems to start to break down. And when you look at some of the swing faults, especially in an amateur, the reverse C is one of the big ones.
Yep.
The spine actually deviates towards the target. And as they come back through impact, it puts a lot of pressure on the right side. So with amateurs, we see mostly with low back pain, in the right-handed golfer, it's the right side that gives them the problem. The reason why that happens and where the damage happens at is at impact, where they have the most lateral bend in their swing. And if you will, if the viewers out there want to stand up and go into that position at impact, right when you're there, you'll notice there's a lot of tension on the right-hand side. And that's really important because there's these joints in your back called facet joints, or for European viewers out there, zygapophyseal joints. And what happens, those joints really allow us to bend and twist and do multiple or move in multiple directions. And what happens is as you press those joints, on the right-hand side, there's a nerve that supplies that area and also continues on to other muscles as well. So every time that you strike a ball, it actually does a lot of damage to those facet joints. And if you take it one step further, you looked at studies of professional golfers and looked at their x-rays, and they noticed that the right-hand golfers, the facet joints on the right-hand side, specifically at L3, 4, 5, are all deteriorated on that side. And at the moment of impact, it's interesting because these little joints, they're very similar to the ones in your finger. They also take on 8 times the amount of body weight on those little joints. So it takes on quite a bit. And that's one of the lead reasons why amateurs get low back pain, is because there's too much or excessive lateral bend at the impact point.
Well, and I think also, too, you know, obviously the professionals, as you indicated, have a different reason for their injuries. And I think it's just more, obviously, and we're talking about the tour players here, They've pretty much got the technique down in that. But what happens with them is just by sheer repetition and for lack of better words, volume of play compared to the amateurs, you can't help in any sport, doesn't matter what you're doing and whether you're doing everything properly, you're going to just have natural wear and tear on these joints. And that's why a lot of times you'll see some professional athletes, like as an example, Tiger, having to have a knee replacement, or somebody else later on, like Jack Nicklaus, had to have a hip replacement because it just, you know, it wears out after a certain while. But your amateur players, again, it's more because of a poor technique. And that's something that we want to stress. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the program, was really to talk about that, because I don't think people truly understand, you know, the importance of good technique and good posture and things like that. And there's a lot of things by visiting, you know, your family chiropractor can help you out with and you know, prolong your golf game by getting you some good advice and some good tips on how to prevent these things. Let me just, Kaelin, I'm going to have you back here in just one quick second. I just got to take a quick pause here and let our listeners know about a great product that they can get their golfing person in the family for Christmas. And we'll be right back with some more questions and answers with my special guest tonight, Dr. Kaelin Teasdale. Hang on there, Kaelin.
I'm good.
Okay. As I mentioned, we got a great product that I want. I've been plugging here the last few weeks, and want to, for those of you that are getting ready to, as I said, buy that gift for that special golfer in your family, here's a great product, the Star Putter Putting Tool. Have a listen.
Hi, this is Ted from Golf Talk Live. Are you looking to make more putts, shoot lower scores, and just play better golf? Now you can with the Star Putter Putting Tool. Simply use the tool 5 minutes before your next round and make 3 to 5 more putts. Practice with Star Putter 15 to 20 minutes, 3 times a week, and lower your handicap after just 10 rounds. Star Putter Putting Tool, available now at starputter.com.
So make sure that for those of you listening out here tonight, as I said, Christmas is just around the corner. Make sure that you visit my website, www.golftalkliveblog.com. And check under the products there. You'll see the link and a little bit of information. And you'll see a short video clip from YouTube that Chuck Cook, a master teaching professional, PGA teaching professional, has endorsed the product. So you want to have a listen to Chuck as he tells you a little bit more about the putting tool. Also, too, just a reminder to the listeners out there that next week, December 19th, is going to be my last show of 2013. And I'm going to have a special guest joining me that evening, Barbara Gustat, who is the CEO and president of the Women's Golf and Travel Concierge, which is a new venture that she's going to be launching actually at the PGA show in January of next year. And she's going to be coming on the program talking a little bit about that. And she's also going to be talking about a new book that she's co-authored called Teeing Up for Success, which will be released actually in the next couple of weeks. So she'll be talking about both of those things next week on my final show for 2013. So make sure that you tune in next week. So, Kaelin, excuse me, let's go down the a little bit further down here. I don't want to quite get off the amateur and professional spot here quite yet. What are some things? Let's talk about first some of the things that each of them can do. What are some of the things that are good for amateurs to do to sort of help prevent some of these injuries? And then we'll address the professionals again, some of the things that are available there. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, sure. So basically there's the top five things you can do to stay healthy on the golf course, whether you're an amateur or professional alike, but specifically for the amateurs. So for listeners out there, it'd be good to grab a piece of paper and a pen, and this will definitely help you a lot throughout the upcoming golf season. So the first thing that is lacking in most amateur players is a warm-up and a cool-down. And, you know, how many times have we seen it that, you know, we're late for a tee time, we're rushing to the first tee. We've been there before.
Yep.
And the first club generally we take out is a driver, and they just, you know, go out and try and smash it. And that's where a lot of injuries do happen as well. And one of the big questions that we get is, what should we do to warm up? What should we do to cool down? And there's lots of good programs out there. But I'll just share a really good study that was done a couple years ago between static stretching and dynamic. And the difference is with dynamic stretching, really you're increasing the range of motion through movement when you're warming up compared to the traditional hold the muscle and stretch for the 30 seconds. And what they found with college athletes, what they did is they took half of them and said, I want you to statically stretch. The other half did dynamic, and they hit 10 balls after that with a driver. 2 days later, they switched groups. And what they found was the group that statically stretched, so the group that held the muscle for 15 seconds or 30 seconds, had a decrease in distance of about 15 yards and were 2 yards less accurate, and the swing speed decreased 3.5 miles per hour. And it's pretty significant. It was just one study that was published. I'm looking forward to more that comes out, but for sure the warm-up and cool-down is a really important aspect of our game, and it's one of the big things that people can do to stay injury-free on the golf course.
Well, and also let me just stop you there for so we can just, you know, touch base on that. You know, it really works out in any, you know, physical activity. I mean, that's very important, obviously, for golf. But that's why a lot of fitness instructors will emphasize the same thing in a fitness regimen. You know, if you're going to go work out at the gym or something to that effect, they always talk about the warm-up and the cool-down. And, you know, the same thing obviously is going to apply in the golf game. And you're right. You know, you hit it right on the head. You know, I can remember going back, and especially in Canada, as we talked about at the beginning of the program, with having some cooler months around, unlike down here in Florida, where you have a warmer climate to work with. If you're playing early spring or late fall in Canada, you know, failing to do those warm-ups particularly, you're playing with cold muscles, and that's a sure sign that you're going to sustain an injury, and I think that that's something that's really, really important. I mean, it's important for everybody, but particularly if you're in a situation like that where maybe you've got a cooler climate, you know, some spring or late fall golf, you want to make sure that you do that warm-up, and then, of course, as you indicated, you want to cool down as well. But certainly a great point for number one. What's number two?
So number two is probably one of the most big important things an amateur could do, is that's take a golf lesson. There's a lot of great PGA, CPGA pros out there, and our education is coming a lot better. We're doing a lot of great things with some of the technology as well. And the more biomechanically sound the amateur golfer is, the less likely they're going to get injured. So that's really a no-brainer. And to do that, I mean, talk to your local PGA, CPGA pro and take a couple lessons, because it'll definitely help out this golf season.
Yeah, and that's a great point as well. You know, I was very fortunate. You know, when I took up, much like you, I took up golf at a very early age. Really started to play a little bit more prominently when I was about probably 7 or 8. And my father, who was an extremely good golfer, certainly wasn't a teacher, but just had a phenomenal game. Where he learned his game, I have no idea. But he was just a great golfer, and actually. If it hadn't been, and I mean, I guess if he had been in today's times with the technology out there, he might have been able to avoid this. But he had sustained an injury as a result of, funny enough, downhill skiing in Canada. And otherwise, he was good enough that he actually probably at that time could have made it into the pro circuit. He was that good. And he taught me the basic fundamentals of golf and just talked talk to me in that day, sort of the important things that you really needed to focus on. And I really pretty much, for the most part of my life, I did take some lessons, but for the most part of my life, was really self-taught. And then, of course, at a later point, I went and worked in the professional end of it and became an instructor in that. But nowadays, there is so much available. And, you know, if you want to, particularly if you're a beginning golfer, gosh, I mean, you know, that technology is there now, and there's some phenomenal, phenomenal instructors out there, you know, to take a lesson with, and they're literally all over the globe. So really, you know, all corners of the globe here for you to take a lesson. So there's no excuse. And I strongly, as Kaylin has just mentioned, suggest as well that you go out and take a few lessons before you you get out and play. How about number three? Sorry, go ahead.
Number three, people's golf bags. It's amazing, you know, especially the cart bag, how much people put in there, or even the stand bags. People got 2 dozen balls, 4 pairs of gloves. So packing it light is really important, and especially if you are taking a pull or push cart. I think the pull cart was misnamed. It should really be a push cart. A lot of people bag on it and drag it all over the golf course. And that load or that twist puts a lot of pressure to the lower back. So I really encourage people, if you're going to push your cart, to put it at the very
yep.
front and keep it as close as possible to your body. And another thing, too, is if you are taking a golf cart, you're less likely to get injured, too, if you are the driver, actually, because you are basically anticipating the bumps and the sudden stops. So you don't have those jolts that that happen.
Yeah.
And just touching on that again is a lot of injuries don't happen on the golf course, actually. They happen in the parking lot with people taking mm-hmm. these heavy, heavy bags out of their trunks and transporting them. When they're bending and twisting, there's a lot of injuries that happen before the fact. So golf bags are really especially important.
Go ahead, Kaylin.
I encourage you to look at what's in your bag and if you really need it for that day.
Yeah, let me just add to that and share kind of a story that I did years ago on the golf bag. I remember TaylorMade, this is going back probably about 20 years ago now, and I remember walking into one of the local courses and that I played quite frequently, and TaylorMade had just made a change in style and came out with this great new staff bag. And this is when they were still playing with the really big staff bags. Now they've downsized them considerably, but this was one of the big ones. And I thought, you know, come heck or high water, I was getting me one. And sure enough, I worked up the nerve and paid it. And it was about probably at that time, I think it was about $400 or $500. And I got it out in the parking lot. And just like you said, I loaded it up, had two or three dozen golf balls in there, a bunch of things. And the first day that I went out and played, and I slung that thing over my back, and I thought to myself, I got to be nuts, because I used to enjoy walking a lot. And and those big staff bags don't fit well on the back of golf carts like the newer ones today. And but it's so true. I mean, when you get all that in there, it's a lot of extra weight, and it's so easy, particularly if you're walking. If you're pushing, a cart or something like that, as you said, that's not so bad. But and just to add about the golf cart that you had mentioned about it's better to be the driver. I can attest to that, because I've ridden with a few people, and let me tell you, they've hit every dip and curve and whatnot on the golf course, and you get quite a jolt. So I can concur with both of those.
Especially if there's a few pops or alcohol involved in that, things can change pretty drastically.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, how about number four?
So I just got ahead of myself there. The driving, being the driver in the cart was number four. And the last point, number five, equally as important, too, is see a chiropractor. Lots of great chiropractors out in the States, as in up in Canada. What we really do as a chiropractor, for those people that don't know out there, really we're a spine and nervous system expert. And we make sure that, especially with the facet joints that we spoke about earlier, sometimes fluid can build up in those joints and require more movement. And that's really what a chiropractor does, is create more movement in the spine so that people can function optimally. And especially with our golfers, with the wear and tear, it's really important to prevent degenerative arthritis, things like that, so that they can function not only in the golf course but in life as well.
And what are some ways that that we can prevent some of these injuries? What are some preventative measures? I know we've talked a little bit, throughout the program, but what are some key things? And obviously we're focusing on the amateurs here. The pros obviously do a good job already, but what are some of the amateurs? Obviously we know what some of the mistakes are, but what can they do as a preventative way to help?
Yeah, I think the warm-up and cool-down is probably the single most important thing, and it's actually gotten into a little bit more of the golf injuries and called a lot of the local pros just to see what they are seeing these days with some of their athletes. And specifically in amateur golfers, we're starting to see a lot more disc-related injuries, so a lot of disc herniations.
Mm-hmm.
And
the
viewers out there, basically there's the spinal disc if you have it. And in between that, it sits between the calcaneus bones in the spine or spinal bones. And what happens is if there's a lot of pressure on those discs, they're kind of like pressure absorbers, they can actually squeeze out, and it places a lot of pressure on the spinal nerve, which goes down the leg, and you get this serious pain and causes a whole bunch of other issues. It's kind of like a jelly donut. If you were to squeeze a jelly donut, the jelly comes out. Same type of principle with this one. But the most common cause of a disc herniation in a healthy disc is, again, lateral bending combined with compression and torsion, and all of which are components of the golf swing. And we're starting to see a lot more of these type of injuries, especially in younger athletes that we haven't seen before. And most of the time, the average person, we see it in 20 to 40. That's really the age category of disc herniation. Don't see it after the age of 40 so much because there's not that much disc left in between the spinal bones that herniate. But with the emergence of some of the fitness programs, I know TPI does a really good job of it as well, but there's a new one that just came out, CrossFit, is pretty big up in Canada. I'm not sure about down in the United States. So they incorporate a lot of Olympic lifting and kettlebell activity. And I'm not a fitness expert or guru, but if I wanted to injure a healthy spine, what you would do is load it and ask the person to lift and twist. So we're seeing a lot of injuries in our younger athletes, even up to up in the 30s. I had two people recently this golf season just call me up and say they can't participate in lessons because they had a disc herniation. And it's not, let's get it out and it's a two-week thing. We're talking about 4 to 6 months from a disc herniation.
Yeah, and especially, as we've mentioned here throughout the show, up in Canada, having a shorter season, unlike down here in Florida and some of the other southern states, to be out 4 to 6 months, that's pretty much your season.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
Especially if you happen at early. Let me ask you real quick here, just for those of you, before I go into this question here, Kaylin, let me just remind the callers, or excuse me, the audience here, that you're listening to my special guest, Dr. Kaylin Teasdale. He's a sports and family chiropractor and a PGA of Canada professional. He's also TPI certified. And we're just talking really about some of the things that he's faced with, day in, day out, that he sees not only as a golf professional, an instructor, but also as a family chiropractor. Some of the injuries that can pertain to the golfer out there and some of the things that we can do. Let me ask you, Kaylin, in addition to obviously, poor posture and some of the other things in the setup, how much does somebody's physical, I want to be polite about this, appearance? In other words, if somebody's a little heavier than maybe they should be, and I don't want to use the word obese, but let's say you've got a situation where somebody, especially with men that have a little bit extra up front here, under the on the stomach, how much of a factor does that play in the injury as well?
Yeah, actually, there are some good studies on that basically screened out the health of most golfers. And some of the soundings behind some of that was if you have a BMI, and BMI, again, is just a rough estimate of your overall health and kind of a screener for cardiovascular disease. If you have a BMI over 26, again, it depends on the age of the person and height and weight, but if you're over 26, that puts you at a higher risk for back injury. And also some of the findings, too, if you had a back injury previously to golf, you're more likely to sustain another injury as well. So there are some pretty good physical characteristics that play a role in that, too. Especially in the younger golfers that we get, we're getting to them a lot younger. So we're trying to reinforce or emphasize fitness is a really big aspect of the golf game. I think Tiger did a really good job of doing that as well. And put in a plug for TPI, too, because they seem to be doing a really good job with that, too. It's just with some of the exercises that are being prescribed. Again, I don't have a problem with the exercises, but I question some of the people who are prescribing them and why they're prescribing them, especially with some of the Olympic lifts.
Right.
But getting back to it, there's a whole gamma that can pretty much screen a golfer. And with pretty high accuracy, you can tell if they're prone to some of the injuries. BMI just being one of them.
Yeah, you know, the reason why I asked that is obviously, you know, even though we're fairly health conscious in some ways today, there's still a lot of people out there that don't maybe take as good care of themselves as they should. And I, you know, I see it out there in the golf course, and maybe they're not as fit as they could be. So obviously, I know that's an obvious area that's going to affect their golf game, but. But when you're seeing people that may be carrying extra weight and things like that, they're of course, it's going to make them more susceptible to injury and joint pain and things like that. And then, of course, you add on that the torque and whatnot with the golf swing, you know, now you're adding sort of insult to injury. And I was just kind of curious your thought on that. Let me ask you something just sort of out of context here, speaking of injury. And it's not meant to be as a criticism to him, but it made me think for a second here. You know, obviously some people get minor injuries throughout the season. What are your thoughts back a few years ago when Tiger first really had some bad knee injury, and I remember he finished, what was it, the U.S. Open. How smart was that on his part, do you think? Seeing the expression on his face that he was obviously in a lot of pain, if it had ended the way it did, I guess the question I'm trying to ask is, was that really smart on his part? I mean, I know it's a big tournament. I know he wants to get those wins. But knowing that the level of injury that he was dealing with at that point and the level of pain, was it really smart for him to continue on? Or should he have got out during that tournament?
Yeah, well, actually in Tiger's book, one of the things he mentioned is his knee goes into a hyperextension, which mm-hmm. puts a lot of tension and a lot of pressure on the ACL and the PCL and in the knee. But when he was competing, I wonder if he knew the extent of the injury. And, I mean, Tiger, you know, he has a whole array of sports doctors and Kairos physios, a whole gamut. I just think that with his competitiveness, he wanted to continue at whatever the cost. I'm not sure exactly what they did to mend his knee, so to speak, but... I mean, as soon as you start to play with the ligaments, and if you were to tear one, it's pretty severe, and that's across the board in any sport.
Right. The reason why I asked that, Kalen, was you know, really simple. You know, obviously, it's up to everybody's own choice what they want to do. But I guess my concern is, you know, Tiger at that point. I mean, he still obviously has a number of years left, good years left. But at that stage, you know, when he's in pursuit of winning and breaking Nicklaus's record, the potential of him doing permanent damage that really could have ended his career, I just don't know if that – and the reason why I'm putting that out there is, again, not a criticism to him. I mean, it's a personal choice. But the message that it sends to me is that, you know what, push through the pain. And you used to hear that all the time in the fitness you know, at the gyms and things like that, you know, no pain, no gain sort of thing. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that's maybe not always the best advice to get, because your body is telling you that discomfort for a reason, that pain level, and, you know, it's telling you that basically you're overdoing it. And I just wonder if in somebody like Tiger's case where, you know, he's got a lot riding and a lot at stake, you know, whether that was really a wise move on his part.
Yeah, I mean, we see it all the time, and that's the no pain, no gain is kind of a big one from the 80s, early 90s. It's kind of been phased out a little bit, but we do see a lot of athletes go through this as well. And when the body feels pain, it's basically a red light or a siren that goes off if something is wrong. And part of it is athletes go through that because the adrenaline is still pumping. Maybe not so much in golf, but a lot of other sports, so they're able to push through it. And that's when a lot of serious damage can take place, especially if you have a ligament tear. That could put you out pretty much for an entire season. We see a lot with football athletes as well.
Right.
And, I mean, off topic again, too, but with football athletes, you see there's a huge problem, especially in the NHL, too, with concussions. Guys that come off that are a little bit woozy and going back in, and, you know, long term, it could do some pretty serious damage as well.
Yeah, and that's what I, you know, that's really why I brought that up. As I said, it wasn't really a criticism to Tiger, but you know, when you watched him take some of those swings throughout that tournament, especially in the final round, I mean, you could tell. I mean, a lot of people question, well, was it more for show or was he really as much, you know? But I truly believe that he was in a lot of pain, and as you said, alluded to earlier, you know, obviously he has a myriad of professionals around him helping him out, and who knows what they did or didn't do to help him through. But I don't know. I just sometimes wonder about some of these athletes when they get into a position like that. You know, especially, I mean, if it's towards the end of their career, you know, I can understand wanting to get that last hurrah in. But when they've still got a lot of game left, do you really want it to take a what could be a minor injury and continue to play and play and maybe make it something permanent that potentially, as I said, could have ended his career?
Yeah, we see that in a lot of the amateurs, too, or the junior athletes that we get. A minor injury can sometimes turn into a major one pretty quickly. And the pressure to perform is definitely there. I just wonder if anybody was there with Tiger saying, you know, you have to stop, you have to discontinue, and he chose to ignore it or go on. It's tough to say, but it was tough to watch him compete.
Yeah.
You know, during all of that, with the grimaces on his face and things like that.
Well, I'll tell you, I felt some of the pain when some of those shots. You know, I mean, I could just imagine, and you know, it just to me. And you know, this is why he's where he is, I guess. But I don't know if it was me, if I would have taken that same risk, you know, because if it had continued on, I'm sure without getting the proper help, you know, he could have very well, you know, had to end his career shortly after that. And I just don't know, given the goals that he has in mind, whether I would want to do that. And the message, as I said, that it sends to the amateur golfers that, well, you know, if Tiger can do it, I can, you know, push through this little, you know, pain here. But maybe, you know, Tiger's obviously at an elite level. He's healthy. He's a young man that's got a lot of energy and got a lot of physical abilities, where a lot of the amateurs out there aren't at his level. And, you know, they might get that idea. And that's why, you know, I kind of mentioned that and was just kind of curious on your input.
Yeah, going back to Tiger, he's a physical specimen. I mean, some of the things that he does are just mind-boggling. But if the same injury happened in another golfer, I mean, they could have been sidelined for a long time, or it could have been a very serious career-ending injury right there. So it's kind of hard to compare you know, apples to oranges. But at the same point, with amateurs out there, if you do have an injury, I guess the message would be go seek help and don't. You see it a lot, too, with golfers, just day in and day out, playing through the pain, taking Advil, Robaxacet, things like that, muscle relaxants, trying to get through it, and sometimes you can do a lot more damage than what you think.
Well, and a lot of times these, you know, these muscle relaxants and things will allow you to continue to play and, you know, not realizing, you know, even though the pain may have subsided a little bit, that injury is still there, and as you said, you could potentially do more damage down the road. And then when those narcotics wear off, you're going to feel the, you know, the wrath of Khan, as it were, of all that extra play and stress that you put on the joints and muscles and things like that. But Kaelin, I want to thank you for coming on. And before I let you go, just a couple things just to wrap up our segment here. It's hard to believe that we've already gone through an hour here. I want to give you an opportunity to. You know, let the people know how they can get a hold of you. You're obviously up in Canada, so a lot of those Canadians or even some of the folks here from the U.S. or around the world that might be heading up your way, they can certainly look you up. How can they get a hold of you and let them know your website as well?
Yeah, sure. Website is Teasdale Chiropractic. That's TEASDALE chiropractic.com. And on my website, there's lots of great information under media about recent articles that have come out, ways that you can prevent injury, what to look for. Also, if you're up this way, check us out at Westwood Plateau Golf and Country Club. We're located in Coquitlam, B.C. Great place to play. We're up on top of the mountain, so a lot of great scenery up there. And also give the viewers my email as well. It's Dr. Kaelin, C-A-O-L-A-N, Teasdale, TEASDALE, @gmail.com. And if you have any questions, feel free to to fire me an email, and I'll get back to you right away.
Perfect. Just to sort of close out this segment, Kalen, just give the listeners an idea of just maybe a couple of things, especially for those up in the colder climates in Canada and obviously the northern parts of northeastern parts of the United States, some things that they can be doing through the winter to keep those golf muscles and those joints and things intact and ready for next season. I know that a lot of the northern areas and a lot of the professionals have indoor clinics and things like that and indoor facilities that they can use. But just give some ideas that what they can do to keep themselves warmed up through the winter months, maybe if they don't have a chance to get out and play down here in the south, as an example.
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. The wintertime up here, lots of white stuff on the ground, but it's actually the best time to work on your swing and work on your game. So we have a lot of indoor facilities, heated stalls, things like that. But it's actually a really good time to spend indoors at the gym as well, especially with those New Year's resolutions rolling around.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like people to actually look on the website, mytpi.com. There's a lot of great certified fitness experts out there, too, that can help you work on those golf muscles. But it's a great time to get in the gym and get more active. And it's a really good time to get things prepared for the golf season before it gets here. A lot of people wait too long, and before they know it, April, May rolls around, and they can't seem to find their golf swing or their right posture. So that's a great time right now to work on it.
Perfect. Some great advice. Kalen, I want to thank you for coming on the program, and I know we talked a little bit off air about an upcoming new segment that I'm going to be starting in the new year called Coach's Corner. We talked a little bit about that. I'm going to send you some information on that. I would certainly love you, for you to take part in that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got some great teaching professionals and coaches and mental gurus and you name it. We've got them coming on the program in the new year starting in March. So I hope you'll participate in that when you've got some free time. And you can let me know what how your schedule will work with that. But I definitely would love to have you back on that segment and talk a little bit more as things progress into 2014.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ted. I look forward to that. And thanks again for having me on tonight's program. And hope all is well down in the States. And if you're up in Canada, please drive safe. And good luck with the golf game.
I appreciate it. Well, Kalen, you have a great evening and a great weekend. You have a fantastic holiday, you and your family. And I will talk to you soon. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing some insight with my listeners here on Golf Talk Live. Thank you and have a great night.
Thank you, Ted.
You're welcome. Okay, that was my very special guest this evening, Dr. Kalen Teasdale, the sports and family chiropractor and PGA of Canada professional up in British Columbia. And great young man to have on the program, and it's really an area that that I want to get into more about. You know, as the show progresses, I've obviously had a few others on the program that have talked about fitness and things like that, but I wanted to get Kalen's perspective on this, because there are a lot of people out there that really don't understand some of the things that they need to do to prevent injuries, and when they do get an injury, some of the things that they can do, and obviously you can visit his website and check out some of the information there and some of the reports and so forth that will help you with your golf game. And that's what we're really here all about on Golf Talk Live. As I promised last week, I am going to do a segment of The Good, Bad, and the Ugly that I didn't get a chance to get around to. And funny enough, Tiger is going to be the theme this week on The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. But before I do that, I want to just read a little bit here. I recently made a connection through one of my social networks of a group over in Scotland. Of course, they're getting ready for next year. In Scotland, they're going to be hosting the Ryder Cup in 2014. And this particular group over there is called Sports Events Accommodation. And if you're looking to rent a property during the Ryder Cup in 2014 in Perthshire, Scotland, then you found the perfect place, and that's with Sports Events Accommodation. They've got a stunning range of properties varying in size and shape, so they're definitely be something that there to suit you. They have a great team who have many years of experience in sports and letting accommodation, And it's their aim to provide you with all your letting requirements. And letting, of course, is another way of saying renting requirements for the biggest team golf event in the world. And they've got it at some affordable prices. So if you're interested in maybe renting some property over in Scotland during next year's Ryder Cup, which takes place September 23rd to the 28th in 2014, over in Scotland, if you're planning on venturing over that way, or if you're in that area and you want to be a little bit closer in hand, you can do so. You can visit their website to get more information at www.sportseventsaccommodation.com, or you can send to get some information, you can info@sportseventsaccommodation.com. That's sportseventaccommodations.com is their website, and info@sportseventaccommodations.com to get some information. They'll gladly send you out some information on the property, and visit their website. They've got some great properties there to look at, and maybe you can rent that out for next year and make your way over to the Ryder Cup in Scotland. I think it'll be a lot of fun, and these guys are a great group. Just to remind you, again, for those of you that are tuning in to the live broadcast a little bit late, next week I'm going to be joined by Barbara Gutstadt, who is the president and CEO of Women's Golf and Travel Concierge, which she's going to be launching in the new year, just around the time of the PGA Merchandising Show in Orlando in the latter part of January, around the 20th or so. And she'll be coming on next week, December 19th, at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time to talk about that latest venture. And also she's going to be here to talk about a book that she co-authored called Teeing Up for Success. So looking forward to having her on there. And that book is going to be out, by the way. I just talked to her a little bit before the show, and that book is going to be out sometime in the next couple of weeks. So when she comes on next week, she'll hopefully give us an exact time when it's going to be launched. And maybe you'll have just enough time to squeak out and get a copy of it in time for that golfer in your family. But got a lot of great products on my website as well that you can check out in time for Christmas, and you can visit the website at www.golftalkliveblog.com. Don't forget to check me out on Facebook as well at facebook.com/golftalkliveblog, and I would appreciate it if you would throw a few likes my way. And if you've got any questions that you want, or maybe you know somebody in your area who's a teaching professional or somebody in the golf business that you'd like to hear on the program, you can certainly email me their information or have them contact me directly at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And if you want to call into the program at any time, you can call me at area code 646-716-4667, and you can talk to either myself or you can maybe talk to one of my guests that's on the program. But as promised, I'm going to do a segment tonight called The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. I've done this a few times in the past and seem to get some good response out of it. People enjoy it. So as I mentioned a few moments ago, Tiger is on top of the topic, and I thought I would wrangle him in. And I'm actually going to have Tiger on all three segments of the good, bad, and the ugly. So let me just start out with the good here first. Obviously, Tiger had a good year, certainly by his standard, won 5 wins, won Player of the Year, as well as the Vardon Trophy, and was the highest earner. And just to name the tournaments there for those of you that didn't watch all of it this year, of course, his first one of the year was in January of 2013, the Farmers Insurance Open. And then he followed that up in March with 2 wins, the WGC Cadillac Championship, and then, of course, he won Arnie's tournament at Bay Hill. And I'll mention a little bit more about that in a second. But he also went on in May, won the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass, and of course he rounded that out in August, his 5th win of the year at the WGC Bridgestone Invitational. Now, of course, Tiger doesn't consider it to be a successful win unless he's winning majors, and he really didn't do as well as he would like. Obviously, he didn't win any majors this year. The best finish he had was at the Masters, where he tied 4th, and then subsequently at the British Open, he had a tie for 6th. But other than that, he really didn't do well in the majors at all. The U.S. Open, of course, he tied for 32nd, and then following that up at the PGA Championship at the end of the year, or at the end of the majors, he tied 40th. So really not a great showing in the majors, but overall, in my opinion, certainly a good year. I'd be more than happy to handle 5 wins and Player of the Year. But I know in Tiger's book, that's unless he's winning majors, he's not happy. And I know he's still on quest to break Mr. Nicklaus's rack of major wins, and I know he's going to continue to do that as long as he can, and I certainly wish him luck. Not bad. I put that in the good category, of course, 5 wins. One of the other things which I mentioned about Bay Hill here in a second, but he's back to number one, which is also in the good category. Tiger had fallen. Really the lowest point in the lowest official world ranking was number 58, where he was down there for a little while. Not very long, but he was down there for a while. It was the worst ranking that he had fallen to in his career. But with that victory at Bear Hill, he regained his number one ranking. He also, this year, nearly shot 59 in the second round of the WGC Bridgestone Invitational. He was really on fire at the Bridgestone. He played a phenomenal round of golf. He eventually settled on tying his career best with a 61, and of course he won the Bridgestone. But shot a 59, had a great tournament there. And so he had a lot of good things this year, and I'm happy for Tiger. He's had a lot of things that have gone wrong in the more recent years, and some of those we're going to talk about here in a second. But I think that overall, I think Tiger is certainly starting to make his way back in a more positive light, and I wish him continued success. I want to see Tiger do well in the months and weeks and years ahead. I certainly don't have any ill will towards Tiger. I know that he's made a few missteps in his career personally, but I don't hold that against him as a player. We each make mistakes in life, and I think that we have to look at forgiveness and that whether it's an athlete or an individual. But anyways, those are some great things that Tiger did in 2013, and certainly should be proud of each and every one of those accomplishments. Now, in the bad category, he obviously has a few here as well, and I've done about two or three in each of the categories. There's certainly a multitude more in each of them, but I just wanted to keep it to three. The first one, and really this could have gone either way, it could have gone in the bad and really could have gone even to the ugly, but and I mentioned this actually on another good and bad and the ugly segment, but the feud with Sergio Garcia. As you may recall, Sergio blamed Tiger for pulling a club out, causing the crowd to loudly cheer in the middle of his backswing, and the back and forth jabs got a little pettier as the days went on, and it really created a bit of a media frenzy, and it just really, that part of it I certainly think was very unprofessional on both players. I think that they should have gotten together or certainly communicated earlier and settled this and not let it go as long as it did. And I know the media, as I mentioned in that segment, the media really was a lot to blame about that. But at the same time, I think both of these gentlemen are at a level, and particularly with Tiger, as I said at that time in that segment, being a number one player and rising to the caliber of player that he is, should have really handled that, I think, in a lot better. So that I put that in the bad category. But it could, as I said, it could have swung either way and gone into the ugly category as well. One of the other things that Tiger is infamous for doing is blaming greens after every round when he's not playing at his best. Somebody has put in an article I'd read, Tiger Woods is the king of catchphrases, and the one that he latched onto this year is, I couldn't get the speed of the greens. Tiger has obviously been a phenomenal putting in most of his career, and obviously he's struggling in that area right now, and that certainly, I think, has hampered him, and I'm sure in the majors has been one of the underlying factors. But when you think about it, there's not really a lot of things that you can say. When you have a bad round, you have a bad round. But to continually come out and use that as an excuse that you couldn't quite get the speed of the greens, I mean, he's playing in the practice rounds, and he's got just as much opportunity as any of the other players, and I think that phrase is getting a little bit old. So Tiger, I think to get that out of the bad category, I think you need to come up with a different catchphrase and something that's a little bit better than I couldn't get the speed of the greens. But anyways, I threw that one in the bad category as well. And obviously to round out the bad category, was the worst 9 holes of his career. And that came on Saturday at the Memorial, which is Jack's event. And Tiger Subsequently has won that tournament five times in his career, so it's an event he enjoys playing in and has obviously had a lot of success. But on this particular season, he posted a third-round 79, which included a first nine stretch of 44, which was really the worst nine-hole total of his professional career. Just not a great showing at the Memorial in 2013, and I'm sure he regrets that, particularly that being Jack's tournament. And I know he wants to always do well, as he has done at Arnie's tournament in Bay Hill. And he's won them the Memorial, as I indicated, five times. I'm not sure the number of times he's won Bay Hill. I think it's about that, if not even more. So I know he likes to do well in both of those tournaments. But this year, for some reason, it just wasn't in the cards, and he played a bad round. So I'm going to throw that in the bad category as well. But it happens. You can't win them all. And I know that... as we talked about earlier in the program with Kaylin and myself, injuries play a factor. And even though Tiger has had surgery and has been on the mend now for the last year or so, I'm sure that those injuries and things creep up every once in a while. And I think just sometimes it's just not going to go your way. So that one was rounding out the bad category. And finally, in the ugly category, again, I've got three picks here that fall into it. The first one, obviously the most important one, is really failing to win a major. And, as a lot of people have put it, Tiger's certainly not getting any younger, and he's not, he's not getting any closer. It's been quite a few years now since he's won a major tournament. He's really struggling to get closer to Jack's record. And a lot of people say, well, you just said in a few moments ago that he's won five tournaments. That's pretty good by anybody's standards, but certainly not Tiger's standard. Tiger, as Jack did and some of the others, but particularly Jack, major championships were certainly the most important tournaments out there. Not that they don't enjoy winning the other ones and playing in the other ones, but really the majors is what they strive to get under their belts. And Tiger has made it very, very clear that he's diligently trying to win enough majors to surpass Jack's record and make his own record. And unfortunately, these last several years, and obviously I think a lot of it had to do with some of the issues that happened in 2009 and so forth with his personal life. I'm sure that's changed the mental framework of Tiger, and it's taken him a few years to get back. But I'm sure that he's got some more majors in him. Whether he'll ever break Jack's record or not, only time will tell. But I'm sure that he's got a few more majors in him left. And, as I said earlier, I wish him all the luck. And I'd like to see him do it, to be honest. He's come a long way, and I'd hate to see him end his career three or four tournaments shy and not at least give a good run to it. He certainly did in his early part of his career, but his last few years, as I said, have really not been his best that we've seen in an earlier time. So that was in the ugly category. The next one, of course, there's been a lot of controversy this year on Tiger with some of the things that have happened. And one notably was at the early part of the season was an improper drop in Abu Dhabi, which ultimately caused him to miss the cut in his first start of the year. He took what he thought was a proper relief from a sandy area and was docked a two-stroke penalty and ultimately missed the cut by one. I don't know if Tiger... if it's just because of what's happened that the media is picking up on it more, whether these things have happened before and it was overlooked because of him winning all of the tournaments that he has and sort of being in the media's darling, if for lack of better words, and maybe now because he's not the shining apple that they're picking him apart more, I don't know. Tiger certainly should know better, and I think that, playing as much as he has and knowing the rules, that was really a mistake, I think. And there was some other ones along the way that he's made throughout the year that he's been caught on. And in this day and age of technology, where everybody and their brothers watching you intently through different video and so forth, it's very easily for things like that to get picked up. So I just think that these guys, especially somebody at Tiger's level, needs to be a little bit more diligent and if he's not 100% sure, take that extra few minutes and get a rules official over here and make sure that he's making the right decision. But he thought he was doing the right thing, didn't realize that he had broken any rule, and obviously he got he got penalized for that two-stroke and ended up missing that tournament. But again, it wasn't the Masters or U.S. Open or something of that nature, so I'm sure he didn't cry over that. But nevertheless, it was still a bad mistake. So I threw that one in the ugly. And one of the other ones that I threw in the ugly category was, of course, one of his worst ever 72-hole total at a major. And that was at the U.S. Open. Tiger Woods was 13 over, giving him a total of 293 at Marion, which was his worst, not only his worst 72-hole total as a U.S. Open, or at a U.S. Open, but also any major as a professional. So he certainly has not had not only good in majors in general, which he's always done well. Even if he didn't win the major, he always fared very well, but he certainly didn't do well this year at the U.S. Open. And it showed in reflective of his score. And I'm actually going to throw one more in here. I've talked about it before. I'm not going to go very long about it. But Tiger, obviously under the ugly category, I would have to throw in his on-course integrity has been brought into question a number of times, and most notably by Golf Channel's analyst, Brandel Chambly, who wrote an article for golf.com that he felt that Tiger Woods was a little cavalier with the rules in 2013, which resulted in a media frenzy and you know, lasted several weeks. And we don't need to go into the whole story, but that was another area that really put Tiger in the ugly category. His integrity on course was brought into, as I said, into question by a number of people, but particularly by Brandel Chambly, excuse me. And I don't necessarily agree with all of the comments that Brandon had made throughout the year. But I certainly can see that Tiger got a little bit testy at times, and I think that this goes back to earlier on too. There were a lot of comments when Tiger first came on tour that they felt that he was at sometimes a little bit arrogant, and I think that with all that's gone on these last 4 or 5 years in Tiger's life, that I think that sometimes you're not always going to be in top form, and I'm sure that that's affected him somewhat throughout his career, particularly these more recent years. But I know that he's going to bounce back. And to end things on a good note with Tiger, let me just say this. I know that Tiger has got a lot of great, great golf left in him, and he certainly has been an ambassador to the sport. And as I said, despite some slip-ups in his personal life, which really should be separate from this, I mean, he is a phenomenal golfer, and I do understand some of the arguments on the other side that when you're in that position that you need to be held to a higher standard. And I do agree with that to a certain extent, but at the same time, we all – are human, and we're going to make mistakes from time to time. But I think on a good note, I think I would like to see Tiger, and I know that he will continue to do well throughout his remainder of his career. And even if he doesn't, tackle the majors as he once did and beat and surpass Jack's list of 18 majors, I know that he certainly has a repertoire that will be very difficult to meet, and I know that players like Phil Mickelson are certainly making a charge, but I would be very, very surprised if anybody for many, many years gets to Tiger's level again. So I want to see him do well, and I know that he's doing well in many other areas. I know that he's in another relationship now and still silly, a family man. He's got his children that he's, I'm sure, dealing and enjoying as they grow older, the many fun things that fathers do. So I know that Tiger's got a lot of good things going on in his life, and I want to see him continue to do well, and I want to see him get back on top, not just as the number one golfer, but just I would like to see him dominate. I think the tour is looking for it again. I think they've wanted it for a few years and been kind of disappointed in these more recent years that Tiger just hasn't gotten up to the level that they want, and I don't think it should be up to what everybody else wants. I mean, obviously it's Tiger's game, but I would certainly root for him and want to see him do well. So that's really my segment for the good, bad, the ugly tonight was Tiger Woods. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things there, and I just want to remind everybody that next week is going to be the last show for 2013, and we'll be taking a short break, 2 week break for the holidays. And I'll be coming back on January 9th. But just to remind you one more time that my guest next week on December 19th, that's Thursday, December 19th at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, my very special guest will be Barbara Gustadt, the CEO and President of Women's Golf and Travel Concierge. And she'll be coming on to talk about that and also her new book that she will be released here in the next couple of weeks that she co-authored called Teeing Up for Success. So Make sure that you tune in next week. She's going to be talking about those things, and I think it's going to be some great topics to talk about. Obviously, when you're talking about golf, you can't get any better than that. So that's why I'm doing this program. And I just want to give one more quick plug to the gentleman over in Scotland here who contacted me and wanted to make everybody aware. For those of you that want to venture over for the Ryder Cup, they've got some great properties over there in Perthshire, Scotland. So if you're looking to rent a property during the Ryder Cup in 2014, that's between September 23rd and 28th, make sure that you visit the website www.sportseventsaccommodation.com. And if you just want some information about that right now, you can send it an email to info@sportseventsaccommodation.com. That's a tongue twister there. And you can get some information. They'll be glad to send you out some, or you can just visit the website and kind of navigate yourself and get an idea before you contact them. But definitely do that. They've got some great accommodations over there. And for those of you that want to go over and partake in some of the Ryder Cup activities in 2014, that's going to be in Scotland in September 23rd to 28th next year. That's a great place to start. So make sure that you visit their website, sportseventsaccommodation.com, and check out some of the great deals and some of the great things that they've got going on over there during the Ryder Cup. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in tonight on Golf Talk Live. We bring this program to you every week, every Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. And for those of you that are tuning in for the first time, the link is www.blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive. And we're live over the Internet during that time from 6 p.m. normally to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Sometimes I cut it a little bit shorter, but usually we go through at least till 7:30 to 8, depending on what I have planned for that evening and what guests I have lined up. And just one final note I want to mention as well, as I talked about earlier with Kaylin, my guest at the beginning of the program, starting in March, and it's going to be official on March 6th, we are going to be starting a new segment here on Golf Talk Live called Coach's Corner. So I hope that you will tune in. It's going to be a really, really exciting segment. This is going to be an opportunity for a lot of you guys to call in and ask some questions of some great teaching professionals from all over the country. We're going to have probably on average each week, this is going to be a weekly segment at the beginning of each of the Golf Talk Live programs every Thursday night at 6 p.m. Central. This is going to be an opportunity for you to call in and speak to some different coaching professionals and teachers and golf gurus and all that kind of good stuff. Give you a chance to call into the program and ask them some questions and get some help with your game. And if for some reason, if you're not able to tune into the live broadcast, if you send me an email ahead of time, and the email address that I'm going to be using for that, I'm going to be putting up on the sites, both on the general website and obviously through the social media, but I'll give it to you here in case you want to get a head start. It's questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. That's questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. Make sure that when you send your question that you include your name and where you're sending the question from, where you live, and a little bit about you if you want, and because we may be having some contests throughout the year as well, so you might get a chance to win some great prizes through some of the segments. But if you're not able to listen to the live broadcast and call in, by all means, start sending your questions in now, and I'll be more than happy to read them out live on the air and in front of our panel, and we'll try and get to as many as we can in each segment. The segment is going to be an hour long, and I'm looking forward to having some of the coaches and the teaching professionals on the program. So we're getting them all lined up right now, and that will begin on March 6th of 2014. And also a new segment that's going to be coming out is going to be on a different day, I believe, but it's going to be called The Women of Golf, and I'm going to be co-hosting that actually with a woman that many of you may know, LPGA professional Cindy Miller, is going to be coming on board with me here in Golf Talk Live, and we're going to be hosting together throughout the year, and that's probably going to be starting in around a March time frame as well. I don't have the specific dates as of yet. We're still hammering out the details, but she's going to be coming on here. We're going to be talking about the women of golf and just addressing some of the issues that women face in the golf industry still in this day and age. So it's going to be a great, exciting segment. We're going to be featuring a lot of great female golf professional teachers and you know, gurus and mental coaches and physical coaches and things like that throughout that segment that's going to be specifically geared and targeted for the women in golf. So I want to make sure that you tune in for that. But don't forget to tune in to the Coach's Corner And don't forget to tune in each and every week here on Golf Talk Live on blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive. That's Thursday, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time at Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico. Have a great evening. God bless everyone, and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.